SBC Media.
Welcome to iGaming Daily, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe. Supported by SBC Summit Barcelona, the industry-leading conference bringing you the future of sports betting and iGaming.
SBC Summit Barcelona is where you can experience the entire global industry coverage under one roof. Join 10,000 industry professionals for 3 days of game-changing conversation and education. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
Yeah, I have spoken with him. I don't know if that's allowed, by the way, but if it isn't, then they can ban me and not add to his. Look, the ban is the ban. It is what it is. I think he recognised and accepted the punishment. What bothers me is we've got to look after people. I don't like the idea that we just leave somebody that they're not allowed to be a part of the football community. I don't think that's how we should work. I don't think that's how the best rehabilitation programs would work.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to the latest episode of the iGaming Daily podcast. On today's episode, Joe Streeter, editor at Insider Sport, and Charlie Horner, the senior journalist at SBC Americas, join me once again in a follow-up podcast to last week's Ivan Tony episode. Now, before we continue, I will address the elephant in the room. When we recorded the Ivan Tony episode, I referenced him as Ivan Tony, which was incorrect, and mainly due to my love of Rocky IV with Ivan Drago. So apologies, Ivan Tony, for getting your name wrong. But I've got it right now, so we should be good moving forward. Now, we recorded last week's episode on Ivan Tony's betting ban on Tuesday, where we provided our thoughts and reaction to the duration of the ban compared to other FA disciplines in the past, and also looked into football's relationship with utilising sporting personnel and gambling products. However, a mere 72 hours later, the report from the hearing was published, and once shifting through the 25-page document, the reason for the length of the ban became more apparent. So today, the three of us will be going through the report and pinpointing some standout charges and looking more closely at what a medical expert stated about Tony. So Joe, I will start with you. What is the biggest thing highlighted in the report for you?
Well, I think it's just how the report... Firstly, James, thanks for having me back on the podcast.
Interesting
discussion last week, and important that we follow it up as well, because the report really did change the whole framing of the debate. It changed the whole narrative around the charges. I think we all came to the mics last week with a sense of injustice for Tony, that the 8 months felt a bit long. It felt heavy. But then this week, I think when the report was released, we all came away feeling like maybe he had gotten away with one a little bit. And I think it's this thing of when, betting, and he was deemed, it almost feels wrong to say what I've just said, because he was deemed to be addicted, and that was the reason for his betting. But it's when that does infringe on the potential integrity of the game. And as much as he was deemed not to have been match fixing, and the games he was betting on, he didn't have an input in the outcome of his bets. It was no breach of integrity, but he skated very close to the line.
Yeah, I was going to say
that's the dangerous factor. Yeah.
If he was to have bet on a game where he was involved, I'm right to say the length of the ban, but it would have been a lifetime ban, though.
No, I think he bet on himself to score. No,
he did.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
on I think 9 separate occasions.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the difference within that and match fixing it, spot fixing it, I think is very clear, even though the lines are slightly blurred, but I do think that lengthened out the ban. But you're right in what you say. I think somebody that was, for instance, betting on themselves to get a yellow card or something like that, the ban would have been far longer. I mean, the obvious example is, as silly as it may sound, and is the Wayne Shaw one from all those years ago when he bet on himself he told his friends to bet on him to eat a pie as part of an FA Cup match day betting special. So,
team was that again?
Sutton.
Sutton United.
Yeah, and the roly-poly goalie. It's a brilliant story.
But yeah, my main takeaway from this was just how, because we found out the type of bets he was having and his involvement in his or his closeness to the bets, it really did change the whole framing and it changed the whole narrative.
Mm-hmm. And just for clarity, before we get your highlights, Charlie, the FA's betting rules and guidelines state that a participant shall not bet either directly or indirectly or instruct, permit, cause or enable any person to bet on EA.1.1, the result, progress, conduct or any other aspect of or occurrence in or in connection with a football match or competition. Just for clarity out there for people who don't know the FA rules, this is what he's been charged with.
I'm not sure why it feels a little bit different when you're, you know, if you're backing yourself to score, backing your team to win, to do well. It does feel different, right? Even if, I guess, regulatory-wise, it's not, then he would be backing his team to concede corners and he was booting the ball behind the goal every 5 minutes. It does feel different, right?
Yes, that kind of baffles me where if he's betting himself to score a goal and he scores a goal, you'll get an 8-month ban or something along those lines. If you bet against yourself to get a yellow card or a severe one, score an own goal on purpose, you then get a lifetime ban. The differences there are ridiculous. And Charlie, it'd be good to get your thoughts on kind of the highlights on what you thought.
Yeah, well, I'll just add on the conversation you were just having there. I think it would be, it's about culture, right? If you set the culture and the precedent of, you can back yourself to score, you can put a fiver on Ivan Toney to score, and then he does score, and then he wins a fiver or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That sets a dangerous culture where, you know, he thinks, well, maybe I can bet on other things. And I think just in terms of setting a precedent across football that we shouldn't be betting on games, whether we are involved in them or not, I think that's very clear. I think my thoughts generally are, again, like Joe said, I feel like there is a sense of unease in criticizing Toney so much, in the fact that we have got medical explanations that he does actually suffer with a gambling problem, and you know, that should first and foremost be addressed, and he should get the support that he needs to battle that. But I do think that, you know, we mentioned it last week when the report was dropped, that it does feel like he did get away with it quite lightly, getting the 8 months, you know, a few of those months coming out in the off season as well, where they're not going to play. He can return to training in September, because some of these bets are particularly they are towing the line in terms of what is really acceptable and what is, you know, really egregious, really. I mean, there's 126 bets in particular that we're going to focus on, I think.
So I'm just going to read out the charges in the report initially, and then we'll dive into some of the, we'll dissect it a little bit more. So the report states that Toney was charged on the 16th of November 2022 with misconduct under FA Rule E1B in respect to 232 breaches of FA Rule E8. He was further charged on the 20th of December 2022 under the same provisions in respect of an additional 30 breaches, giving a total of 262 charges. On the 17th of February, the player indicated that he admitted to 190 of the 262 alleged breaches and disputed the remaining 72. On the 17th of March 2023, the FA indicated that of the 72 breaches disputed, 30 would be withdrawn and the remaining 42 would be pursued. Now, on the 21st of April 2023, Mr. Toney responded, admitting to outstanding 32 breaches. So the 232 breaches of FA Rule E8 that were admitted by Mr. Toney included the following bets, which are of particular relevance to the sanction exercise and which can be divided as followed. And as followed, we'll look into them now. Charlie, do you want to just give us some breakdowns of the bets themselves?
Yeah, so I think really we're looking at 126 bets which were placed on games involving teams that Toney was either registered for or was playing for at the time. Obviously, he had a long string of loans from Newcastle, I think between 2015 and 2018, before he signed for Peterborough. And a lot of the bets come within this timeline. So I think 29 bets were to instruct or bets to instructions to bet. that Tony was on loan at, I think it was Wigan at the time.
Was it against Wigan versus Aston Villa, was it?
I believe so. But I think the ones that we're going to look at specifically, there were seven matches where he bet on a team that he was registered with or contracted to lose, which is obviously a standout, egregious bet.
It's really worth noting that he was not found to have any breaches on. It's not a match fixing offence. He's not been found to have been involved in any sort of match fixing or anything like that, which I think would have potentially been a lifetime ban and would have certainly elevated the sentence significantly. He obviously just thought that his teammates at the time were a bit rubbish, and obviously there's inside information and he shouldn't be doing it, but the lines between that and match fixing are very, very, very fine and very significant.
Yeah, it's worth noting there that I think on these specific occasions, he was on loan at Wigan and was betting on Newcastle to lose. So it wasn't as though he was starting for Newcastle.
And Newcastle was his parent club.
Yes. And he wasn't playing for Newcastle, scoring own goals, passing the ball away. He wasn't involved specifically. So yeah, it's worth saying that it wasn't match fixing. Nonetheless, it's still a fairly egregious breach of the rules and something that I think the FA originally wanted to impose a much larger sanction than the original 8 months, right?
What caused the sentence to come down? It was that he was found to be a gambling addict. He was found to be addicted at the time, and I'm not sure where he sits on that now, but you do raise an important point, though, that he's been sort of sent away almost on house arrest. Not quite on house arrest, but he's not allowed any involvement in football. He needs the help, obviously. He needs to get the help he needs.
It raises a great question.
Like, it should be rehabilitation, right?
Yeah, so the report stated that, well, he was examined by Dr. Philip Hopley, and the doctor said that he suffered from gambling addiction and he had compulsive or / impulsive disorder. The transcription from the report, they were back and forth from the FA saying that he had control over his gambling addiction or gambling habits. They went off Dr. Hopley's report and saying that he has a gambling addiction, but yet you then ban him for 8 months where he can't mingle.
Socialize.
He can't integrate himself with the football club. And this is a time when this player needs all the help he can get. And I believe you heard it in the intro yourself, Gareth Southgate, that he needs this help. He needs this arm around him to come over his demons, to say, and kind of help him get over this gambling addiction. But if you've pushed him away from the club where he can't actually integrate with the club, he has to be on his own. How are you helping him get over these addictions? I think that's an interesting point to raise.
Well, the FA have used the gambling addiction angle as mitigation. So originally they wanted to impose a sanction of 15 months. But given that Tony himself pleaded guilty to the vast majority of the breaches, that reduced the suspension to 12 months, of which there was another 3-month mitigation for Dr. Hopley's findings that he was suffering from gambling addiction and in some cases, or in most cases, wasn't actually in control of his behaviour. So I think in that regard, you know, I think the FA mitigating that is fair enough, because you can't let Tony off the hook per se for all of these betting offences, because again, we talked about culture and precedent and setting an example to others. However, there is clearly a problem between the relationship between footballers and gambling.
It's interesting though that the evolution of the punishment off the back of finding out that he was diagnosed with an addiction was just simply to reduce the sentence slightly, and rather than to evolve the punishment as a whole and sort of I wouldn't know what it would be, but to help him get rehabilitated and to help him recover from that addiction, as heavy as that sounds. but instead it's simply to reduce the sentencing. I hope there are other things involved where he is getting the help and support and can come back and be strong. And as you said, we said about Gareth Southgate, he's given him a light at the end of the tunnel with potentially being available for the England squad in Euro 2024.
I will just add to that because I've just got the report open in front of me now. And like Charlie said, these were the mitigating factors. It states the position appears to be that Mr. Tony has ceased gambling on football altogether, but he still gambles on other sports and casino games. He's determined to address his gambling problem with therapy at the conclusion of this session. For other mitigating factors, it includes his relative youth at the time when the breaches began, his previous good record in respect of anything other than on-field breaches, and his genuine remorse, which he expressed in fulsome terms before the commission. Now, I kind of want to address that. He is going to address that gambling problem with therapy. I would have liked to have known more in the report what the FA are doing in terms of helping him out, and also kind of the gambling sector, because we talked about in the last episode where I think there needs to be more education between gambling operators and players. Well, definitely with players, with gambling operators and gambling. And this kind of screams to me that this player is addressing them by himself, not having the help and the support from the association that they're making a lot of money off this man. Making a lot of money, and it doesn't seem to be there to help him. He's doing it on his own accord.
Yeah, and we saw during COVID when people were back at home on their own doing nothing. They had nothing to do. It was simply essentially a serving a ban like Tony will be doing. They weren't allowed into offices, weren't allowed to socialise. Operators had to readjust their approach to safer gambling because the risks were higher because you're sitting at home with nothing to do. So more players turned to casino games, would have been sports players that turned to casino games because it's not restricted to it's not restricted to time. So the idea now that Tony is potentially even more vulnerable whilst he serves an 8-month ban and is unable to interact or go about his daily business.
I think this is the most important thing, right? He's a 27-year-old man who's very extremely wealthy. He's going to be at home until September with not much to do. As the report outlines, he's still betting on casino games. There was a fascinating report in The Athletic over the weekend. I don't know if any of you guys managed to read that, which detailed just how rife the gambling is across football, particularly casino games, poker at the back of the bus. So that kind of culture is ingrained in these teams. And as the report states, he's still betting on casino games. You know, is he receiving the support he needs throughout that time? I know he's receiving therapy and things like that, but still he's going to cut quite a lonely figure during this time. And I think a lot needs to be done.
I read a report from a law firm in Bournemouth where somebody that had done a lot of research into this warned that, you know, this will be the tip of the iceberg because of that culture. And this is a worrying epidemic maybe that needs to be addressed.
We're going to round it off a little bit because, Joe, I want to get your thoughts on a Crystal Palace story that came through. Yeah. But before we get on to that, we gave our thoughts and opinions on the last episode, on the Ivan Tony episode last week. I'm going to assume our thoughts have definitely changed on the severity of the ban. We've already mentioned it, but Joe, do you think the ban is very lenient now? How would you compare your answer now after seeing the report to last week?
Yeah, in a sense, he sort of got away with it. I think it's worth knowing we haven't fully heard Ivan Tony's side as well. You know, he's teasing a statement. He's teasing
a
review.
Response.
No filtered response, quote unquote. So it will be interesting to hear that. I await that. But yeah, I don't think the ban is so much harsh or lenient. Just think it because he's been diagnosed a gambling addict, and I just think he needs the support. I think that needs to be part of the. I'm not going to say punishment, but the rehabilitation, the process to getting back into football.
Yeah, rehabilitation is the right word. Yeah. And that's something I think a lot of news outlets need to kind of push forward more instead of just saying this is a ban. This is a consequence of your actions. Let's focus on the rehabilitation of a gambling addict. And I think, so I was saying that the ban was a bit strict last week, or a bit harsh, sorry. And we made great comparisons against racism and other aspects that the FA have done disciplines in. I still think that needs to be addressed if you put in such a severe 8-month ban on this. But I think for what Tony has done, the amount of bets he's placed and everything we've now seen from the report, I think I think 8 months is a little lenient. But I'm with you, Joe. There needs to be more now on how Ivan Toni is going to overcome this gambling addiction and what's being set out, not just from the gambling industry and not just from him himself, but from the FA in general, of how they're helping Ivan Toni, move forward and kind of get over this.
So what changed it for you? Is it because of his involvement in the, because of his closeness to the bets, if you like?
I think it's the closeness from the bets, but I also think the way he tried to conceal the evidence. So he created an account with William Hill. I think he placed 4 bets and then closed the account straight away, using different mobile numbers, different names. He was deleting texts between friends. I think that kind of, if it was just he placed these bets and he was found to be placing bets, I would have been like, it might be a little bit too harsh. But because he's tried to cover his tracks, even though he has pleaded guilty at the first opportunity I think he got, I still think covering his tracks does more harm than good.
I think the other point to note about that type of behaviour is it's red flags for addictive behaviour, right? It screams addiction. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. And I think it works both ways, though, in the sense that I do think that type of behaviour really acts as evidence that he was suffering at the time and he was under an illness. I mean, addiction is an illness.
Yeah. Charlie, what's your thoughts on?
So I think both of you have kind of covered what was going to say about the length of the ban, but I would say that this is now a precedent set by the FA. It's a high-profile case. It's a player who is, you know, his third highest goal scorer in the Premier League this season. He's on the periphery of the England squad. It sends a message to other people out there, other players out there, that, you know, if you get involved in this kind of activity, okay, you will be provided with support that you need if you're suffering, but there are consequences to those actions and you will face the punishment. It will cross over to other sports as well. We spoke last week about some of the developments in the US as well. I'm sure that other sports leagues like the NFL are keenly watching what's happening in this case. So this could really be a landmark moment in the, you know, the betting integrity space.
We spoke about the Trippier and Barton comparisons last week. How do you think they weigh up? Now we've got this the further evidence on this one. How do you think they sort of weigh up? Do you still think the comparison is, do you still think they're sort of fair in comparison to this? Or
you'll have to forgive me because I haven't read the full Joey Barton report, or if I have, but I think with the Kieran Trippier case, that was insider information saying to his friends, hey, lads, lump all your money on me joining Atletico. And then, of course, he joined Atletico. I think that from an integrity perspective, that is still pretty egregious, but he wasn't placing those bets himself.
What was his ban again?
It was Trippier's? 10 weeks, I 10 believe.
Week ban.
And that it's important to say that that was a ban from the Spanish Football Association, rather than the English Football Association.
So play for Atletico at the time.
Yeah, so it's important to say that this isn't a precedent set by the English FA.
Ah.
These are two completely different governing bodies, but I think the comparison can still be made.
Yeah.
Because the Trippier incident was just one incident, whereas this is 232 bets and 126 in particular.
Really interesting to compare, you know, the mindset of the two. Both ends of the spectrum as well, right? One is just leisurely betting, trying to earn his mate, or his friends allegedly betting, his friends trying to earn a quick buck. The other one was in the midst of an addiction and couldn't really stop himself. So, yeah, the two mindsets, but Trippier, 10 weeks. Yeah, Tony, 8 months. It's an interesting one. It's obviously the severity of the bets is far different, but yeah.
Yeah, just running out of time, and I already mentioned that I want to just touch on this Crystal Palace story, Joe. So can you just inform the listeners of what's happened with Crystal Palace?
Well, we saw the first deal off the back of the white paper. It's something we spoke about a lot last week. of whether the white paper will change football's relationship with gambling. The Premier League clubs were widely lauded for the decision to remove front of shirt sponsorship being gambling operators. There was this weird elephant in the room that the sleeve spot is still available. I think we even mentioned it, but sort of went under the radar. And as until now, and Crystal Palace have agreed, the first club to do so, have agreed a deal with Kayun Sports, an unknown Asian operator. It's the stereotypical deal that was widely criticised, really. And they've agreed that on their sleeve sponsor. So hot off the back of the Ivan Toney situation, hot off the back of the gambling white paper being reviewed, this will lead to scepticism about whether football's relationship with gambling is really changing, or if they're going to try and keep it the same.
Perfect. And for the listeners out there, you can click on the link below in the description where I have attached the article that Joe has just referenced. That's all we've got time for today. So Joe, Charlie, thank you for joining me. To our listeners out there, thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of iGaming Daily, brought to you in conjunction with SBC Summit Barcelona, being held at the Fira Barcelona Montjuïc on the 19th to the 21st of September. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.